Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here is talking to start the show with Jim Hurley. Jim, a professor of civil and environmental engineering at UW-Madison and director of Wisconsin Sea Grant. And we're going to talk about how Wisconsin became the first college Sea Grant program in the Great Lakes and just why it's a Sea Grant and not a Lake Grant. And I hope you'll join in with your questions and comments. Maybe some of your experiences that you've had with Sea Grant. Love to hear from you. You can call us at 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Jim Hurley, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Larry. It's great to be back with you.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. Well, let's talk about this anniversary of the Wisconsin Sea Grant Program and celebrating in September, right?
That will be our official 50th year anniversary of the Wisconsin Sea Grant Program. But actually, we've been celebrating the 50th anniversary of Sea Grant in general for 6 years now. So, and that's the history of those intervening years were really important in establishing the program and establishing the first program in the Great Lakes.
I think it'd be interesting to talk about some, but what's the history behind Sea Grant? And everybody will always ask, why isn't it a Lake Grant?
Yeah, that's great. And a lot has to do with different language in congressional language and such, and there are some interesting stories that are intertwined with that. But the history of the program goes back to a futurist, and it's interesting that we talk about the past and the future of Wisconsin Sea Grant, because it was really the founder of Sea Grant was a futurist, and his name was Athelstan Spilhaus, and amazing guy. He did his doctoral work at MIT during World War II. He invented the Bathe thermograph, which was a way to look at temperature in the oceans, and was really important during World War II because that was important in trying to figure out where submarines were. Wow. Because they were below the thermocline or in the oceans. And he was always forward thinking. He was known as a Renaissance man and just a man of amazing ideas. He was a professor at the University of Minnesota. He went to form their Institute of Technology at the time. And he was, the story goes, and this is from a book called With Tomorrow in Mind. One of our Sea Grant staffers, the amazing Sharon Moan, wrote this book to celebrate Athelstan Spilhaus in 2016 when she was with Minnesota Sea Grant. Now she's with Wisconsin Sea Grant. But some of the stories in the book, and one of the stories is that Sea Grant was conceived in the back seat of a taxi on a way to a meeting in Minnesota. and the way that Spilhaus used to think is that he used to think about what we could do in the future. When Sputnik was released, he saw that as a wake-up call. And one of the things he did was he did a comic strip, a syndicated comic strip for 15 years or so, which was called Our New Age. And it was all about the future. And he worked with Buckminster Fuller to try to do these self-sufficient cities and recirculating water. Many of the things that we still study today. But specifically for Sea Grant, what he conceived as he was on his way to the meeting is, why can't we do for the oceans and our coasts what we do with land grant? So the history, there are a lot of parallels to the land grant program here in Wisconsin. And so he really pushed this idea of doing research extension on ocean and coastal issues, much in the same way that the colleges of agriculture and mechanics, engineering and such were set up under the land grant program. He thought that that's a great model, but we should be doing it for the coast. Now, he was also in Minnesota at the time too, so he was also in touch with the Great Lakes. So our first 50th anniversary was spent on was in October of 1966, or the 50th was 2016. I mean, and what we were celebrating then was the official act of Congress that that authorized the program. So our gap in that 6 years is sort of like, you know, the Constitution of the United States to Wisconsin becoming a state. You know, you had to show your chops during that time, and so once it was signed, then Wisconsin got some funding. But the interesting part of the authorization language is the words "Great Lakes" show up six times on the first page of the authorization language. and it was because of people like our first director, Bob Rogotsky, who worked with the congressional representatives here in Wisconsin. And, you know, particularly at that time, with senators like Gaylord Nelson and Bill Proxmire, they were in tune with these types of issues. And as you think about it, this was even pre-Earth Day. When this was formed too, and so those types of senators were really influential in getting that language into the National Sea Grant College Act. And like I said, it's if you print out the act itself, you see the word Great Lakes in there, and the way that it was justified was that they are inland seas, that Sea Grant can be a part of it because we have these inland seas and we have such precious resources here in the upper Midwest.
Well, it was a very good idea. And you mentioned Bob Rogotsky. I you know, and I've been doing this show long enough, I interviewed Bob Rogotsky about the Sea Grant program about 50 years ago.
That's right.
He's an amazing guy, by the way.
He was. And we're really sad because we really wanted to celebrate our 50th anniversary with Bob, and he passed away late last year. And so he didn't get to be a part of our 50th celebration. Mm-hmm. But he was the one that was in charge of, at the time you had to go through this through institutional status. And by the time we got to 1972, Wisconsin became what's known as a Sea Grant College. So that's what we're celebrating this year, the Wisconsin Sea Grant College program, which basically ratified us as a UW system entity that serves the entire state of Wisconsin and our universities, and sets up a program that was probably pretty easy for Wisconsin to set up because we already had the Wisconsin idea. People knew about that, and Sea Grant is such a great example of the Wisconsin idea.
It is indeed. Maybe we can talk about some of the things that Sea Grant has accomplished over the years. I know way back a long time ago, I gave some assistance on helping set up a recording service that went to radio stations around the around Wisconsin and the country, providing information on the radio about what was going on with our seas and our Great Lakes.
That's right. Earthwatch Radio was one of the more popular Sea Grant programs across the country.
Yeah.
It wasn't just in the Great Lakes. And between the Nelson Institute here on campus, or what became the Nelson Institute here on campus, and Sea Grant, it used to fill public service spots on commercial stations and on Wisconsin Public Radio and other public radio stations too. And we still have a number of those recordings are still archived, but it also shows the transition that and the resilience of Sea Grant, I guess it is, because now we're taking advantage of podcasting. And you change with the times.
Yeah.
And if you can see the road a little bit ahead, you can figure out what will be some good vehicles to get information out.
Yeah. What about some of the other accomplishments or some of the kinds of work and things that you that the program did over the years?
Yeah, well, I was probably because of my background, I'm an environmental chemist, and I think in the early days of the Wisconsin Sea Grant program, Bob Rogotsky looked at the problems that we faced here in Wisconsin. And at the time, Bob always said, we are not going to be fish grant. We're going to do more than fish. And that's what some of the other programs do or did out on our ocean's coast. But Bob, his foresight on what we needed to concentrate on, and as an environmental chemist, I'll give you an example of the Fox River and the problem of PCBs, that Bob worked with partners. It's not that Wisconsin Sea Grant solved the problems that of the Fox River. It's that Wisconsin Sea Grant knew its niche and knew where it could help to solve some of the problems of the Fox River. So early in our program, we had contaminants research was pretty important. And developing techniques for PCBs were really important because we had to measure them at such low concentrations to really understand how they were cycling in the environment. And things that came out of that work, fish advisories that the Department of Natural Resources put out, some of which are still around today, but understanding some of the physical chemical properties and how PCBs bioaccumulate, a lot of that was done, and some of the founding work was done on that through the University of Wisconsin system and focused on Green Bay and the Fox River. And so if we look back over the years, the remediation of the Fox River is almost complete. It took a long time to do, but it couldn't have been done without understanding fundamental processes. And so it's an example of partnerships with the state, partnerships with the federal government, and partnerships with local communities to inform them all the time of what we're doing, translating the science to the stakeholders that need it. And that's one such example.
And we can talk about some more of them. Bob Rogotsky, Jim Hurley. I had Bob on my mind. Jim Hurley is our guest today. He is the current director of Wisconsin Sea Grant, talking with him about the program. And certainly we'll be talking about some of the issues relating to our Great Lakes as we move along today. There are certainly some things, water levels and climate change. There are lots that we can talk about with him. And I hope you'll join in with your questions and comments as we move along. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau is our producer today. Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Celebrating 50 years of Wisconsin Sea Grant on the show today. Larry Mueller here, my guest Jim Hurley, director of Wisconsin Sea Grant. And I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments as we move along today. What would you like to know about the program, or what questions do you have about the Great Lakes? Join in, 800-642-1234, or you can email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. How is Sea Grant funded, by the way?
Sea Grant is funded through NOAA, through the National Oceanographic Atmospheric Administration. So the funding comes from the federal government, and then you have to have a 50% match on any funds that come from the government. And that's where the important part of a partnership is, that one of the reasons Wisconsin was one of the first programs is the state of Wisconsin stepped up through the UW system and provided that match of the federal funds so that we could get off the ground and have a strong program. And that remains today. We still have extremely strong support from the state through the UW system.
Maybe you could talk about some of the research that Sea Grant is working on right now. I imagine there's an array of things.
Yeah, and it's constantly changing, and you try to stay ahead of the issue. when I talked about PCB problems on the Fox River, I mean, our newest contaminant of concern or emerging contaminant is PFAS, so per and polyfluorinated alkyl substances, that these types of compounds, there are numerous types of compounds with, like I said, for PCBs, different chemical, physical, physical types of properties to them. And we find that they are accumulating, that they are bioaccumulating in some fish, they're bioaccumulating, and they can accumulate in humans and cause thyroid problems. But their original use was a fairly important use, and that was in firefighting foam. There are also Teflon, other types of things. But if you think about it, that a compound was developed really to help for at airports with fires, and especially those with fuels in them. But it was because of those physical chemical characteristics of PFAS, and different from PCBs, which that we say they're hydrophobic, that they don't like to dissolve in water. They partition to organic matter, to fish and such. These compounds are both hydrophobic and hydrophilic. There are different parts to them that give them different characteristics. So the other thing that's different, that has changed over the course of time with PCBs, is our ability to measure at the nanogram per liter or less, part per trillions levels, has just increased so much over our ability to detect at those low levels. So first, in order to study PFAS, you really had to have in the environment, you had to have the ability to analyze and to do it at such low levels, and then to translate what you're finding. And we're at towards the beginning of that, but it's not going to take 50 years to like the PCB problem on the Fox River. We're better now at analyzing. So Sea Grant is supporting research in looking at PFAS in Green Bay, where one of the larger point sources are. We've been working closely with the state agencies. We've actually had a program of fellows, postgraduate fellows, that work at state agencies or federal agencies, and we've had someone with the Department of Health Services that's worked on that, and that really, those types of issues and understanding PFAS is really, I think, right in Sea Grant's wheelhouse, because there's some very basic, some very applied research that needs to be done, and then we have to have the specialists, the outreach specialist that's trained in certain areas to bring those results out to communities. And so we have a really good working relationship with the DNR, the Department of Health Services, and many of the UW system entities that are involved in PFAS research.
Hmm. Just as an aside, are they working on other ways to put those fires out other than the use of PFAS?
Yeah, and we're seeing that those have been eliminated for other types of compounds, and we always have to, when we go to a new compound, we also have to be ahead of the curve in predicting what we use. But yeah, that is being phased out. But when you think about it, it was a pretty important compound, especially if you have a fire that has been caused by jet fuel or other things that you, high temperature fires that you want to put out right away. And that was the same thing that when back a few years ago with the refinery explosion in Superior, that there was that PFAS were used to contain that fire. And that was something that Sea Grant got involved in right away. We get a call from a group at the National Estuarine Reserve up in Superior that said, we're going to start sampling the creek that drains from the fire, what do you think we should do? And we said, well, I think PFAS is what you want to look at. So make sure you use the right sampling equipment, those types of things. And this was maybe 5 years ago or so.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
we wanted to get them analyzed. And there was only one laboratory in the state that could analyze it back then that had a certified lab for PFAS. And it was a private lab. They're not even our state lab of hygiene was certified at the time. So we actually invested some funding too, that since the state lab of hygiene is part of the UW system, is part of UW-Madison, we were able to put some development funds over there to help them get up on certification for these compounds. And so it's a huge effort, and it involves partners and lots of partners. And that's what I think Sea Grant does well.
Yeah. Speaking of, my mom worked at the state lab of hygiene for her entire career, a long time there. And really enjoyed working there, as a matter of fact, just as another aside. So that's one of the things that that you're working on, which is obviously very important. There are so many other things that can relate. And one is, gosh, we've got climate change. And I'm wondering, are you guys doing anything in that area now?
Yeah. And in fact, another example of a great partnership program, early in February, we'll see the release of the second version of the Wisconsin Initiative on Climate Change Impacts, WICI, as it's known around here. They're going to release their next report because it's been 10 years since the first. And there's been a lot of Sea Grant input to that. I just love the way that this was set up, that the WICI process was set up, because it was really a bottom-up type approach. People form different working groups based on their specialties, and we have state, local, national organizations and private sector and NGO all coming together to discuss certain types of topics within climate change. And we were just a really small part of this, but the report will be out over the next couple of weeks. And some of the preliminary things that we've seen is that since 1950, or since a few years before Sea Grant was formed, that temperatures in the state the average temperature is raised about 3 degrees, and precipitations increase about 17%, I guess is the number there. And then the last two decades have been the warmest on record, and the past decade has been the wettest on record. So those things have profound effects on the Great Lakes. We've seen the Great Lakes go from a record low to record high levels, over 5 feet of water level change on Lake Michigan. We've seen that occur over about a 5-year period, and that's caused multiple problems. Our peak was about a year and a half ago on Lake Michigan, but there are so many resilience types of issues that you have to understand with those great changes in water levels. We've seen bluff erosion along the lake. We've seen parts of Wisconsin, southeast Wisconsin, where homes have just had to be abandoned because they were too close to the shore. But the one thing about climate change is we think about it as these as the average changes and such, but it's really the extremes that we have to worry about. I mean, when you get a record high water level on the Great Lakes, and then you get a pretty big storm that comes through. Last December, there was so much damage to the harbor of Milwaukee because of the Great Lakes level and just the way that the wind set up. Green Bay has experienced flooding, especially with a storm out of the northeast that that pushes down. So we've got to become more resilient, and we have to think of ways to plan ahead. The phrase "build back better" that we see on a national level, that's a pretty good concept, because we don't want to build back to exactly the way it used to be, because we'll be in the same
boat. Just as a side comment on this, I can remember over the years there were times when the Great Lake Michigan, for example, was really low.
Yep.
And then 5 years later, whatever amount of time I just threw in that 5 years, it would be really high. And then it would go back down again. But do you see this not happening as much down the road because of climate change?
I think we'll see extremes. We'll see more extremes. When you think about, you know, as we sit here in Madison back about 3 or 4 years ago, we had a huge rain that was just west of the city.
Yeah.
And that had that fallen over Lake Mendota in the Madison area, directly upon Lake Mendota, the flooding would have been catastrophic on the isthmus because of that. So there's parts of the wiki or the climate change initiative is looking ahead and saying, what type of infrastructure do we need to have? How do we plan for the possibility of those extremes? And we've had, since that time, within the state of Wisconsin, we've had larger rainfalls of 5+ inches over a day. And that's that's resilience. That's being able to build back better, as you would say, you have to think ahead and you have to think about the extremes.
Jim Hurley, our guest today, as we talk about the Wisconsin Sea Grant, what's going on with our Great Lakes, and even we got into some of our inland waters as well. Questions for him, give a call at number 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. I know, I'm thinking back to those recordings and now the podcast that you're doing, that's a part of education, and it's an important part of what Wisconsin Sea Grant does, I'm sure. Talk about the programs you're offering.
Yeah, our education, we've actually grouped education and workforce development together on a national basis, and then we locally respond to that. But Wisconsin Sea Grant has always followed the mode of teach the teacher. We try to do more. We try to have it touch as many people as we can. And by teaching the teacher, we hope that then we can multiply our efforts through that. So we have all sorts of teacher training programs there that we have. What we call attack packs, which are which teachers can use in the class to talk about aquatic invasive species, and a young student can actually hold a sea lamprey and look at a sea lamprey, which is sort of our classic our classic invasive species. Now it's more towards quagga mussels or zebra mussels. So we can educate through that. We've got a trash trunk that talks about. Microplastics and marine debris and how important that is as an emerging issue, and we also try to push citizen science and getting people engaged. I mean, if anything we've learned through the pandemic is to try to follow the science, see what the science says and how rapidly it's emerging. I was struck last week over the weekend when the Tonga explosion, the volcano came, and I'm on Twitter, so I follow Twitter, and I was surprised at the number of people in Wisconsin that had weather stations that were recording changes in barometric pressure, and you could actually see at the speed of sound that wave from that explosion could be visible here in Madison. So that type of connection to science in everyday life and fun is something that we're really proud of being involved with.
Let's take some calls. Bob in Claybanks, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having the show.
Sure.
I was just curious as to whether or not the science on the fluctuating levels in the Great Lakes is pretty much settled, or is there still some doubt, so to speak?
Yeah, that's a great question, Bob. It's interesting because 10 years ago when the climate change impacts study came out, we were actually in a very low water period or close to the low water period. And the models that have been developed since are showing a little bit wetter Wisconsin, a wetter part of the lower, a wetter part of the lower part of the upper Midwest. And we think that they'll come back, that they'll be high. We may get those extremes, but it is just following those models and following things on an annual basis that there's a natural fluctuation over the course of a year in lake levels of the Great Lakes, obviously from spring and where you get the higher levels coming in the spring. But you know, the other big factor in the Great Lakes is evaporation. What relative humidity is going to have on an effect of lake level. So that's a part of the science that we still have to do a little bit more work on to understand the Great Lakes, because it's not the last term of water from the Great Lakes isn't so much the outflow in a lake like Lake Michigan, it's the evaporation that you get. And the same for a bigger lake like Lake Superior.
And thinking about ice cover, then if climate change, maybe talk about that for just a second.
Yeah. So if we do get ice cover, then we're not going to have winter evaporation, and winter evaporation is pretty important in maintaining or in fluctuating levels in the Great Lakes. So if we get a really cold winter where we get a lot of ice formation followed by a really wet spring, that sets up the dynamics for a pretty large raise in lake levels over the time. And that's, in a way, that's what happened in the course of that 5-year period. So it's understanding the present and predicting the future, but there's still more research to be done.
Yeah. Someone else wondered if you're doing any work on the invasive species that you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, we have been. And you know, if I think about some of the history of Wisconsin Sea Grant, the work that we've done in invasive species, and especially from the outreach side, is extremely important. Focus of recent work has been the transition of zebra mussels to quagga mussels in the Great Lakes. The fact that quagga mussels were much more invasive because they could actually live on soft sediment, so they cover the entire lake. If talking about education earlier, there are great videos from the teacher programs that participated on Lake Michigan, where the teachers ran an underwater camera on a sled that basically goes across the bottom of the lake, and you can't even see sand anymore in parts of the lake. It's just covered with quagga mussels, and so yeah, that's part. But it's also trying to predict what's the next invasive species. Try to see how we keep Asian carp from making it into the Great Lakes. There's a newer zooplankton that forms, or not a zooplankton, but an invertebrate that eats zooplankton that's taken off. But it's an invertebrate that fish don't eat. So this is why when we think about the oceans versus the Great Lakes, I tell you the food webs in the Great Lakes, I think, are much more complicated than those in the oceans, because they're so close to having invasive species or having the ability to be influenced, because basically all of our Great Lakes are coastal. The coasts are right there. So.
Steve wondered if it would be possible to take lake excess water from floods and use pipelines to send it to drought areas.
That's a great comment. And that is, or that was the part of a major lawsuit and legislation that protects the ground.
Oh, we lost you a little bit there.
A time where we have excess water and would like to use it elsewhere. But the compact now, which was signed by Canada and the U.S., prevents water from being transported out of the Great Lakes.
From my parochial view, I think that's a very good good thing. Let's keep our water here. And
that is. But thinking about the future, that may be what drives population towards this area too, is the availability of fresh water too, and how do we predict the changes that may come in the Great Lakes area if more people start to move here?
So what have you got going for the future here in the last minute or two we've got, Jim?
Oh boy, we've got it's just so exciting for different things that we may be doing. Congress was very good to Sea Grant in the Infrastructure Act, and they put money aside for marine debris that Sea Grant will be a part of. So what we're trying to figure out is what is our position in that? What's our sweet spot? And I think that obviously education is going to be huge in plastics and such, but
yeah.
there's really a lot of fundamental research that has to be done in microplastics and how that plastic bag that may have floated out onto Lake Michigan gets converted into tiny little pieces that then some may concentrate contaminants on them just because of their surfaces. So it's a sort of a secondary effect of marine debris. That's certainly coming around the corner. And hopefully trying to figure out what the next contaminant of concern is going to be in the Great Lakes.
So what's the, just to conclude it, how do people learn more about, you've got a website, where do people go?
We do. And you can go to Sea Grant, all one word, SEAGRANT.WISC.EDU. If you do a /about, you can see some historical pictures, some of the things that I've been talking about today and some of the people that make it such a great organization. I mean, I'm really lucky to be associated with this program and be surrounded by great history and great people who are part of our organization.
Well, I tell you what, we probably, neither you or I, will be around for the 100th anniversary. Maybe we could do some more updates as we move along before that time.
Great.
Jim, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thanks so much, Larry.
Jim Hurley, professor of civil and environmental engineering at UW-Madison and director of Wisconsin Sea Grant. Take a look at their website. They've got some really cool stuff going on there, and I know you're going to like it. Well, one thing you're not going to like is lead from ammunition and fishing tackle is causing a lot of problems for our wildlife, especially birds, and we'll be talking about that next. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.